For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Tommy, we bought a Corvette.
Yeah, that's right. So we bought a used Corvette for a lot less money than it was new.
Well, not that much less money. I think we overpaid for it. We spent $72,000 by trading in our Defender 90. So let's talk about the money we lost, because we're if nothing else, we're transparent at TFL. So on Labor Day, we bought a Defender 90.
Yes, a used one as well. That was, how much was it when we bought
53.
It? 53,000. The MSRP was 63. So we got it a year later for 53.
And the problem with it, which we thought was a benefit, was that it didn't have a rear set of doors.
Yeah, so the Defender 90 is a really cool little two-door version, but turns out nobody wants them on the used market. We had a really hard time selling this car because every dealer we talked to said, these things just sit on the lot. Everybody wants the Defender 110 or 130.
Which makes sense. I mean, this is really kind of, you know, a toy, because it's hard to get in the back seat, and the four-door is much more practical, and even though the two-door is much cooler. So we basically traded it on the vet for $42, so we lost $11,000 on that.
Well, more than $42.
$42,000.
Depreciation is not that crazy. So we lost $11,000
since Labor Day.
6 months.
Having said that,
that's pretty terrible.
Having said that, we just lost $11,000. And then I think I overpaid for the Corvette, because I had to write a check for $30,000, which is the difference between the 42 and the 72.
Yeah.
But you know, I come to this epiphany, my man, and that is, sometimes it's worth paying a little bit of more for kind of knowing what you're getting and who you're getting it from, because we bought that car from the owner of the dealership that we always use to buy our Chevys and our Rams and our Jeeps.
Now, I don't want to take the wind out of your sails,
okay,
but I just saw one sell and bring a trailer. It's 2020, like ours.
Yes.
With 40 miles. It's a brand new car.
Yeah.
62.
3LT?
It may have been like a 1LT.
Well, that's a big difference.
I mean, not really. It's got like heated seats, cooled seats. So I think that car is probably closer to like 65, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe 62. But look, we buy high, we sell low here.
Yes. That's a good way to go. It's a great way to go out of business.
Yeah, but that's the way we operate here.
So before we talk about the Corvette, what'd you think of the Defender? We really didn't do a goodbye video, because I drove it to Phoenix, and after that I kind of did a what's it like to live with video, so I didn't want to repeat everything I said. Did you like the Defender 90, if you're in the market for a Defender? So we bought the first Defender when it came along, and it kind of had issues. I don't want to rehash all that, so we thought we should buy another one and give it a chance, but this one was pretty bulletproof, dude. People are terrified of Land Rovers and Range Rovers because they think they're just gonna, you know, wet the bed. But this thing was flawless.
Well, all the comments now are going to be, didn't you go through three of them in like 6 months?
Yeah, I know, but we've told that story.
But you can't ignore that story, is my point. But the thing is, those three that we went through, the first one was Land Rover's fault, but the next one was the dealer's fault. They broke the wiring harness, and the third one was perfect. And actually, the one that we just sold was also perfect, and that had that four-cylinder that people were a little bit hesitant on. That Defender 90 was my favorite car that we owned and drove last year. I absolutely positively loved that thing, because it was such a cool balance of comfort and design and luxury, But that one specifically, the base model Defender 90, felt rugged and it had the rubber floors and it was utilitarian and the steel wheels and it was so cool. It could wear hats unlike any other car. It could dress up if it needed to. It could put on its construction hat. It could put off its off-roading boots. Construction hat. Construction helmet. You can tell I'm not very blue collar here. But the point is that it could wear all sorts of different clothing for the occasion, and it did everything so well.
Well, it got me thinking that the reputation that Range Rover / Land Rover have is really hurting the brand because...
Well, it's been hurting the brand since 1982.
Yeah.
Of course it's hurting the brand.
No, I mean really hurting the brand.
It was hurting the brand in 1982.
No. I don't think it was hurting the brand. I was around in 1982. As I recall, you weren't alive in 1982, yes. So let me.
But Land Rovers from the beginning have had the reputation of being terrible.
No, I don't think so. I think that's relatively, when I say relatively, a new development, maybe in the last 20 years.
I don't think
in 1982 when I was in high school, Tommy, and I loved cars, Land Rovers had the same reputation. But let's not argue about that.
But I do want to make one more point, which is a good point.
Okay.
So if you look at Australia.
Yes.
And if you look at much of the African continent,
yes,
the first vehicles in many countries and throughout much of Australia were Land Rovers.
Right.
And then when Toyota came out with the Land Cruiser, yes, and they started becoming popular in the 80s, they decimated the world. They got rid of every Land Rover. Not every Land Rover, but the majority of them because they were better built. Land Rovers. And
I like how you talk about things that you weren't around
yes,
for.
Yes, but that I do a lot of research.
I know you do, but I lived it. I was your age and I lived and I did as much research. You weren't around when Mutual of Omaha was around. Okay.
You're right.
Mutual of Omaha, Wild Kingdom was one of the most popular TV shows in America.
Sure.
And what it featured was the classic Land Rovers
yes,
in the Serengeti.
Yes, they were awesome.
And the people lusted after them because they saw these things, you know, climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, chasing after elephants.
Yes.
And there was no, or if there was, I didn't know about it. There was no, and what are we, once again, you're arguing about something that I didn't want to argue about.
But
there's no sniff of like, these things are useless and they're.
They're not useless, but they were unreliable.
And no, there was no sniff of that. So, it was the exact opposite. It was like, hey, if it can tackle Africa, it can tackle Hinsdale, Illinois.
So I'm going to have you raise your right hand for a sec. I want to play a game. I, Roman Micah, do solemnly swear the 1982 Range Rover Classic is a reliable vehicle.
I didn't say it was reliable. I'm just saying it didn't have that reputation that it has now.
Maybe not that, but they were not well-made cars. The Range Rover Classic, you said it yourself on this podcast.
You just can't let it go, can you?
But
can we just let it go and move on? Can I make my point? I don't want to argue about what you weren't around for. Let me just move on. So my point, which you're not letting me make, Tommy, about something you're so adamant about that you weren't around for, is the fact that even though our Land Rover mm-hmm. still had 36,000 miles and 2 years of warranty,
yeah,
factory warranty, complete coverage,
yes,
if any, it still lost a lot of money because mainly of the reputation that these vehicles have for being unreliable, even though the thing had a full factory warranty. So for the next 2 years or 36,000 miles, if anything breaks on it, the factory will have to fix it. It
doesn't matter. Because, and I see this a lot with people that buy new cars, they're like, bought a new car, it'll be great, it's got a warranty. The warranty doesn't necessarily compensate for the fact that the car has been in the dealership for 3 months. That's the problem. Just because the cost may be covered, and this is the complaint I see about Land Rovers, is I bought a new Land Rover and it was crap. I'm like, it wasn't crap, you had a full warranty. And they're like, it was crap because it was out for 2 weeks every month. That doesn't compensate for
that. Yeah, but that happens to every brand.
Yeah,
those anecdotal stories are around every brand. I've heard them. I just heard it today on one of the podcasts I listened to, people talking about Lucid and how they had to buy it back. I heard the same thing. Matt Farah was talking about how his friend had a Rivian and
sure,
they had to buy it back. I mean, it's every car, but in general, if you own a Land Rover and yes, you have to take it to the dealership, they're not going to leave you high and dry. They will give you another one.
Yeah.
They will, because that's what they have to do. I don't know if the same thing's going to happen if, you know, you've got an extended warranty, maybe not, maybe yes, I don't know. But I'm saying if you have a new car that's under factory warranty and the thing takes a dump, they will provide you with a loaner for the most part. So yes, it may be inconvenient, but you're not left high and dry. Anyway, let's end that topic.
No,
once again, all we're doing is bickering.
Hold on, Dad. I think this is a really good topic.
Okay.
And this is what people come to the podcast for.
To hear is bickering?
So father-son bickering. More so than anybody at this company, except for Case, I'm a Land Rover fanboy. I love Land Rovers.
Uh-huh.
Genuinely, they're my favorite vehicles on the road.
Mm-hmm.
But I am very self-aware to the fact that Land Rover, they just came out with the J.D. Power 2024 survey.
Yeah.
Still at the bottom. They're still at the bottom of the reliability surveys. So I think it's unfair to say that the company's made huge strides.
I didn't say they made huge strides. You said that.
But
I didn't say that.
The reputation is there for a reason, is what I'm saying.
All I said was it didn't have that reputation back in 1982. I didn't say they made huge strides.
Listen, Dad, I know you were alive in 1982, and I was not.
See, he won't let it drop.
Because, Dad.
You can't be wrong. You gotta
I know a lot of people that have Range Rover Classics, and they're all terrible. They just don't. They're not
I'm not saying the cars are great.
But that's where the reputation came from.
I'm not saying the cars are great. I'm not saying they're not. They're the epitome of reliability. All I'm saying is when I was around 82 and I was a car guy, loved cars, read all the Buff books, four of them, cover to cover, there was not this like constant drumbeat of these things are completely unreliable and they'll leave you stranded.
Okay,
it wasn't there.
Maybe I'm wrong. So what we'll do is if you were around in the 1980s, leave your comment below.
Sure.
Let's see what the feedback is.
Okay.
Because you're right, I wasn't there, and maybe I'm totally off base. But from my experience living the Land Rover lifestyle, at least today, the Range Rover Classics...
I said in the last 20 years, they've developed a reputation.
But the Range Rover Classics from the 70s and 80s were worse than the ones today.
And I don't... I got to argue with you about J.D. Power's, you know...
I mean,
the business model for that particular survey is they go and basically... interview a lot of owners, ask them about their car experience, and then they put out a press release, and then they go to the brands that have won and said, hey, by the way, you're the most reliable. Do you want to use that in your advertising to sell more cars? If so, you're going to have to pay for that little J.D. Powers, you know, whatever that little logo is, a lot of money. And so when you have a survey that's based on selling the winners, the fact that they won, I always think it's a little suspect.
Okay, what about Consumer Reports?
That's more honest because Consumer Reports does go out and buy their own cars. And I think that those guys, you know, do have a much higher standard of reliability because this is what that brand has stood for.
So when they're at the bottom of the Consumer Reports survey, is that?
Yeah, that would be more meaningful to me.
Okay. Listen, Dad, I love the brand. I've owned many of their products, and I will continue to do so. But I think that the reputation they've earned is not necessarily a recent thing. Like, Discovery 2s were so bad in 2004 that they had to change the name to LR3. That's how bad they were. And that was 25 years ago almost now.
I'm talking 82, Tommy.
Yeah. But maybe they were a beacon of longevity.
I didn't say they were a beacon of long. I just said there wasn't this constant drumbeat of them being the least reliable brand out there. And I'm only judging that because every time we do a Land Rover video, there's like half a dozen or more dozen comments where people are like saying, wait, can we just leave this? I'm so tired
of
this.
But I don't think that it's necessarily earned for the modern cars. Because I do think that, look, we have a lot of audience members that drive Defenders. And they seem to really be happy with them. They seem to be really holding up well. So if you look at like the history of Land Rover products in the Discovery, for example, the... recent history, Discovery 2s had fundamental design flaws that made them problematic, right? They had head gasket problems, they had slip liners, they had all these things that you can point to as design flaws. Then LR3 came out in 05, and that era, LR3 era, became really good. I'd argue the best Land Rovers ever made. Then the LR4, they introduced the 5-liter V8 and the 3-liter V6, and we got to some more problems, specifically with transmissions and timing chains. Timing chains have been a big problem. That continued into Discovery 5. They got better. The new ones seem to be a lot better than the ones that came in like the 2000s. Maybe in the 1980s, they didn't have the reputation. I can't say that for sure. But I think the new ones are on an upward trajectory, which I'm excited about.
Look, I just think there's a list of British car brands as long as my arm that have been one car sale away from going bankrupt. And this is not just Land Rover. This is Jaguar. Mm-hmm. I could go on and on and on, right?
You
know what I mean? Consolidation, companies being bought and sold. Rover is another good brand that would be symptomatic of that. Not Land Rover, but Rover itself. Think of any British brand, and it's always one car away from being out of business. Lotus, same thing. And when you're living hand to mouth like that, I think reliability is hard to come by.
But I think Range Rover, Land Rover are very profitable now. I mean, especially in this SUV craze, they sell a lot of cars.
Yeah, that's been a recent development.
You know, and I don't know about Mini, right, in recent years. Mini's now very much just kind of rebadging BMWs, like with the Countryman, and they seem to be pretty well-made cars now.
But what I'm saying is that British cars in general
sure
were not a beacon of reliability, but because the car companies were always on the verge of going bankrupt.
And the big problem, and I'm a really big British car nut.
Yeah.
This is why I love you, but this is why I'm challenging the 1980s Range Rover was reliable, is because I know the story of British Leyland. And British Leyland built some of the shoddiest cars on the planet. They were constantly facing management issues and labor strikes and infighting.
Yeah, I get that.
And Range Rover was within the British Leyland umbrella.
What you seem to misunderstand is, and maybe once again, because you weren't around, there were very few Range Rovers in the country in 1982.
That's a good point. Yeah, yeah.
You know, now you can't swing a dead cat without seeing one. So,
but I'm talking worldwide. I'm not talking U.S. Well,
I lived in the U.S.
Sure, and you know, Range Rover was a very, very, very small brand in the 80s and 90s.
So when I wanted to buy a four-wheel drive car, just a four-wheel drive car, right? Mm-hmm. You know. That Range Rover didn't even come into my mind.
They were also really expensive. They were shockingly expensive.
Not just because they were expensive, but because they weren't something like the dealerships weren't around. They were not something.
Yeah, for sure.
So the choice I had back in the day was a Bronco. Mm-hmm. More specifically, a Bronco 2.
Yeah, God.
Right. An O.J. Simpson era of Blazer.
No, that's Bronco. O.J. Simpson.
Oh, sorry, Bronco. Yeah. A Blazer, right?
Okay,
the big ass, and these were all too big and too expensive for me, and I didn't have any money. So then it came down to like a Suzuki Samurai. Those came out, in the late 80s. An AMC Eagle.
Sure.
The Audi Quattro came out eventually.
Mm-hmm.
That list is like, you know.
Subaru.
Yeah, no.
One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
You really don't like 80 Subarus. I love 80 Subarus.
No. It wasn't even on my radar because that was such a tiny brand back then that you wouldn't even. I never saw a Subaru in the Chicago suburbs.
But in Colorado, you probably saw them.
I saw AMC Eagles here. I didn't see Subarus either. Such a small.
You're right. So Range Rover was a very small brand in the U.S. in that period. I'm just thinking the worldwide reputation of Range Rover by the 1980s.
I don't know what it was. I'm just telling you, when I was, you know, in that era, Americans did not think of Range Rovers, Land Rovers as being unreliable.
And that could be too because they were so infrequent.
Yes.
Yeah. You had Land Cruiser too. Land Cruiser was around in the 1980s.
Yes.
Very popular.
Yes. Land Cruisers already were establishing a reputation. Those were certainly on the list because my roommate in college bought one.
Yep.
They were underpowered. So the reputation they had was very reliable, but very slow and very underpowered.
I think that the...
That they had those straight sixes, right? The FJZ or F whatever the hell that designation.
No, that was the 90s. They had the FCJ. I think that the Rangers of the 80s are very cool. And I would love to own one day. Range Rover Classics. It got kind of expensive.
Yeah.
And maybe you're right. Maybe the reputation wasn't there. But I just think that they weren't well made products.
I'm not saying they were well made. I'm just saying.
So
I looked at them on Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, and I lusted after them because they were like,
yeah, they were awesome. They were cool. Badass, but they weren't good cars per se.
I thought they were good cars. I thought if you're chasing antelope around the Serengeti, it's a pretty damn good car.
They didn't show you the breakdowns in that show, did they?
No, of course not.
Exactly. So, anyways, going back to Defender 90, it was my favorite car we owned last year.
Cole, did we beat that horse to death? Yeah, Cole's our producer over there. Yeah, I think we did.
So I really love that Defender 90. I had a great time driving it. I'm dearly going to miss it. If it was just a little bit more depreciated, I probably would have bought it from the company. But then I ran into that issue where it would be replacing my LR3, which I also love.
Yeah.
But it's only two doors.
Right.
Right. And I love the two-door thing, but I know my wife would not like the two-door thing. So it goes back to that dealer problem where the four doors are just the ones that make the most sense.
So let me go back to why I think overpaid for this Corvette. Because Corvette prices are going down. And I talked to my friend who sells these and who owns a dealership. And he said something that was very wise. I said, you know, for a long time, vets were 10, maybe even 20,000 over sticker. And I said, why, you know, why now have they already, you know, started to come down in price? And he said, everybody who's wanted one got one.
Sure.
And I think that's basically what happens.
Well, that, but we're,
I think it happened with the Cybertruck too. Everybody who wanted one got one.
Yeah. And that's kind of just the typical lifespan of a vehicle, right? Corvette comes out, way over sticker, calms down. Z06 comes out, way over sticker, calms down.
Yeah. Everybody who wants one gets one.
ZR1 is going to come out. I'm sure those are going to be over sticker. Then they're going to calm down. I don't think so. The thing about Corvettes is 72 is a lot of money. The sticker on it, though, was basically 100.
Yeah, just under 100.
So 20,
it's a 3LT with every option, so with the Z51 package.
With 6,000 miles, yep, it's $28,000 off sticker, right?
Well, probably more than that, because when that thing, that's a 2020, those cars were selling at least 10 over sticker.
Yeah, but
if you figure that,
but the guy who bought it probably didn't pay over sticker.
No, he owned the dealership. Yeah, he didn't pay. I think he paid under sticker.
But I'm saying that now you can get them.
Yeah,
you can get new ones still now. They're on dealer lots, of course. The non Z06s or Z01s, and they're like 92 to 96 realistically. Even though on paper they start at 70, so they're pretty affordable starting. But in the real world, they're all going to be upper 80s, low 90s. So, look, I'm not upset that we overpaid a little bit. I think it's a really good car that we got. I know it's been well-maintained and it's very low mileage. But it is possible to get them into the $50,000 range, yeah, if you
one,
are shopping.
There's one next door to us at the GMC dealership. I looked at it. It was 57. They lowered it to 55. Same 2020, 30,000 miles. And I looked at the Carfax. And every corner of that, it's a moderate damage. No airbag deployment. Every corner.
Yeah.
You know how you look at the Carfax and they do the little like highlighted parts where the
sure
car was hit? Every corner on that car was hit.
Yeah.
How do you manage that?
Well, you spin it, and then you bonk it into a wall.
And you spin it again to flip it to the
exactly
other side?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, or you get rear-ended and you bonk the front. So
you were saying that a C8 sold on Cars and Bids for some phenomenal amount. Tell me about that.
No, so the cheapest C8 that sold on Cars and Bids was about 50,000 miles.
Yeah.
One owner, if I remember right,
yeah,
clean title, sold for $49,500.
Okay.
But a C7 just sold on Cars and Bids for like $25,000. Which is unbelievable value.
Yeah, I think they would call that well bought.
Unbelievably cheap. And I think that
poorly
was
poorly sold.
Well under market, because I follow C7s quite closely.
You want a C7, don't you?
I do want a C7. And they're like 37 to 42 for like a...
I don't blame you. You can get a manual one still.
Yeah, I mean, I like the C8 a lot.
There's one big problem with the C7.
What?
Sorry. What do you think it is?
What is it?
That's what it could keep me from buying it. The manual.
Well, then get an automatic.
Yeah, I would get one.
It's a solution solved.
No. I would, if I'm going to buy a classic, what is becoming, I want the manual. No,
I mean, it's not a terrible, it's a 7-speed.
There you go.
But you just don't use 7th gear.
Yeah, it's everything else then is geared toward that 7th gear.
Well, the 7th gear in that car was really, really tall. So that was like a cruising gear. I think you could hit top speed in that car in 5th. And then 7th was just an absurdly tall gear.
Did you notice at Porsche with their new 911T, just went to the 6-speed.
Yeah, the 7-speeds, they've tried them in a bunch of cars. Aston did them, Porsche did them, and they never really caught on. It's just too many gears to
get
to
run. Yeah, there's something that just really, I like, I'm the kind of person who likes to get the use out of everything I buy. But I feel if it's just sitting there, I don't want it. And that 7th gear is just sitting there taunting me. It's like, you will never use me, I'm here. And then it's just weird because there's just one too many gears, and it feels like the... stick shift is no longer a fun instrument. It's just this like ever increasing number of gears that you can never utilize. And so I can never get past that 7-speed. It's just a weird 5 is fine, 6 is fine, 7 way too many.
I'm good with it because I would just never use it. You just drive it like, I mean, my
but
Jeep.
It's there.
Yeah, but my Jeep was like that. I had this Wrangler.
It's there taunting you every time you drive it. It's just there. Come on. Come on, see if you can make it all the way to 7th.
So I had this Wrangler JL.
Yeah.
And I never used 6th gear because it was always too tall.
But that's different because it's not hanging way. Maybe people won't understand what
I'm
saying.
I don't understand what you're saying because, like, it's a similar concept. 6th gear just never made sense. So I always was in fifth.
You never used it on the highway?
No, I didn't. I couldn't use it.
Unless, well, that's because you couldn't use it. That's a whole different thing.
No, it was the gearing was so bad in sixth gear, it wouldn't let me use it.
Right, it was bad. So, I mean, but if you could use it, you would have used it.
Yeah, but I would use seven if I could use seven. Like, that's fine. Just get it in seven, then leave it there.
Anyway, I don't like seven gears, as you can tell.
I think that, the C6s are really good cars, and they're now, like, solidly in the mid-20s. And we owned one, and it was awesome. Until we blew the clutch on it. But the...
We?
Yes, it was we. It wasn't my fault that the clutch slave cylinder crapped we? Out. That the... We, when we brought it to the...
I like how you use we.
We,
as in you weren't driving it when the clutch blew.
I didn't blow the clutch. What happened was we were on the drag strip.
Yes.
And I made it to the end of the quarter.
And I somehow blew the clutch.
No. I pushed my foot down on the clutch. And it never came back up.
Right.
So we took it to the transmission shop, and he said that the clutch fluid was so black, it was like tar. And basically what had happened is it blew the slave cylinder, which is in the rear transaxle. So in order to get the slave cylinder out, you had to drop the whole thing out. And then while we dropped the whole thing out, we put a new clutch in just for shits and giggles. It didn't need a clutch. It was fine. The clutch was fine, but the slave master blew.
You know what the craziest thing about that car was?
What?
So... It was hilarious. So when we go to sell it, right,
mm-hmm.
This guy shows up with like this giant manila envelope.
Uh-huh.
And he pays us. We sold it, I think, for $23,000.
Uh-huh.
He paid us in cash, but in ones, fives, tens, and twenties.
Yeah, he was like a waiter, right?
That's what he said. So I believed him. I mean, you know, there's other businesses where you end up with a lot of 20s.
Right.
But I believed him. I, you know, having owned a restaurant, I believed him. But, you know, I think Zach spent much of the afternoon counting $23,000
in 20s.
In 20s, 5s, 10s, and singles.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that car, I almost guarantee that car's dead now.
He said that, you know, that was his dream car.
I hope so.
And he saved up tips, and I believed him.
Look, if you sell a Corvette to a young guy, it's going to end up in a tree one way or another, or at least it's going to have tinted taillights.
That's what Haggerty said about the Aston Vantage that we bought. Yeah. They won't allow you to drive.
Exactly right. No, but the C8 that we bought, so it's a coupe. There's two different versions.
Yeah.
There's the coupe and the convertible.
Uh-huh.
And the coupes are convertibles. They have been since, I think, 1984. You just remove the target panel, stick it in the trunk, and then you've got, you know, a nice open top experience and no trunk, except for the front bit.
So why don't you like the C8? I get the sense that you don't like it.
I talked about this in my video.
Yeah.
The
There's
C8,
a video coming out. On LTFL.
It's out already if you're this podcast is live.
Really?
Yeah. Check out TFL car.
Well, this won't go live until Monday.
Well, then it'll definitely be out.
Right.
The video's going up this weekend. So the C8 is techno music. Okay. They really, really, it really feels like they targeted the 911.
Yep.
And that it is mechanically perfect with zero flaws. And what I mean by techno music is every beat is in its place. Every note falls within the scale. It is perfectly timed. But what I loved about older Corvettes is, yes, they were very mechanically impressive, but they were also a little flawed that added a lot of character. They were blues, right? Where maybe you play a note outside the scale. Maybe you mess with the rhythm a little bit. So like the C7 is a good example where that exhaust note was just gnarly. It just spat and banged and popped and it was angry. And you had the manual transmission, which made the car slower, but it was engaging. And it was technically worse, but it was more fun. And that's what I feel like they went too far with the C8. They spent so much time analyzing the 911 that they forgot to make it a Corvette. And that's what I think is a little bit of a miss.
Well, first of all, it's the first Corvette that's mid-engined.
Yeah, which once again, it's better. On paper, it's better.
And this is a cliche, but it's true. I mean, it's a bargain basement supercar.
100%. I'm not disagreeing.
Ours is the base, not in terms of its model lineup, but in internal stuff you've got in it,
it's
right?
It's not an E-Ray. It's not a Z06.
Yeah, it's not a ZR1.
Yeah.
So it's the bottom of the line. And yet it's got a top speed of 196.
Yeah.
So 0 to 60 in just under 3 seconds.
I mean, it did the Nürburgring in like 7 minutes and 29 seconds, which is faster than an LFA. It's faster than a Huracan. It's faster than an Aventador. It's faster than an R8 V10. Like it's I'm not arguing the performance. The car is an amazing machine technologically. I just think that my two problems, I talked about the techno thing, and then it's got so much tire and it's got so much grip and the performance threshold is so high that even when you're pushing it on a back road at, in some cases, double the speed limit, the car doesn't even feel like it's trying. It's just bored, right? What I like about my old C5 is it was wobbly enough and had a thin enough tire where you could really feel the chassis moving at normal speeds.
In the C5, you could feel the chassis moving because it was moving.
Yes, it was a little rickety. But you want to fix the lights here, Cole? But the C8, you have to be going so go right to jail speeds to really feel that chassis work that it's kind of like, well, I'm never going to experience that.
I would say if the Corvette were built by a company who's Italian and starts with the letter L or the letter F, people would be like swooning over how good it is. But because it's a Corvette built by General Motors and sold to, you know, aging men, it has a reputation of being an old man car.
I think it used to, but this new one has kind of surpassed that.
I don't know if it has.
I don't know. People give the C8 a lot of respect.
I listen to a lot of podcasts, and you know, whenever people talk about like stuff they lust after, it's always like, and look at all the YouTubers, same thing. All the young YouTubers, right? The top of the line for young YouTubers is a Lamborghini, and then if you're an older aficionado, it's a 911. And then if you're super rich, it's a Ferrari, but the Corvette is still relegated to the old man category. Even though the car is mid-engined, even though it's got, you know, a top speed that most people never dream of or see, even though, you know, it's handling, it's in like 80% of its ability is sublime, and yet people never give it enough credit. And that's kind of why I bought it.
I think from what I see online, that was very much the case with C4 through C5.
I have two problems with it.
Hang on, can I keep going?
Yeah.
C6, I think, started getting more respect. C7, even more. By C8, especially people my age, like, this is the first Corvette I can think of in recent years where, like, young guys really into it.
You just spent 5 minutes telling people how it's not jazz and how it's techno.
It's not my thing, but for most people, it is mechanically perfect. It's amazing. It's an amazing car.
Or the stereotypical, I'm the old guy, I like it, you're the young guy, you think it's not jazzy enough.
No, usually it's the opposite. Usually young guys like to put cams in their Corvettes and do crazy burnouts. But like, you can't really do a burnout in a C8.
You could do a burnout. No,
you can't, because it's mid-engined and you can't really dump a clutch.
I was doing a burnout trying to use launch control
today.
Yes,
you can spin the tires, but you can't lock the front wheels and then do a crazy burnout like you could in an old
one. Yeah, but it's a sports car. It's not a muscle car.
That's the problem, though, is that you used to be able to do big, crazy, smoky burnouts, manual transmission,
you could do
clutch
that,
dumps.
You could do those in the Camaro and people stop buying it.
Yeah, and the other thing I would say to you, Dad, is like, you can say that people don't give it respect, but they outsell all the cars you talked about, like 4-to-1. They sell a ton of Corvettes, so people are buying them. And Z06 has got more respect, I think, than any sports car on the market right now, except maybe GT3. People love Z06s. ZR1s are blowing
people's
mind.
No one's driven them yet, have they? People have not driven the Z06. Not the Z06, the ZR1.
ZR1. Yeah, but Z06, I'm saying, the people that have adore them. They say they're amazing.
Yeah, we don't know, GM. We didn't get that invite.
But the thing is, once again, you have to be such a good driver to maximize a Z06. I'm not even skilled enough to use a base Corvette, let alone a Z06.
Here's what I would tell the fine folks at a lot of these supercar manufacturers.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Right, they tend to invite people who go...
Oh, don't be sour grapes
This is not sour grapes. This is the truth. People who go on the track and then they wane lyrically about how wonderfully it goes out of a corner and how wonderfully it holds a turn. And, you know, except the problem is most of those cars are driven by people like me who naturally don't usually go on the track, right? The percentage of people who take any of their vehicles on the track is minuscule because it's very expensive and tracks are hard to find. So, there are a bunch of rich dudes and gals out there, you know, who've bought homes at racetracks around the country and track their vehicles. But that's such a small percentage. And so maybe GM is smart, you know, maybe that's how you you sell more Corvettes. You show how able and competent it is on the track.
That's right.
But in my experience, and this is not sour grapes, this is just what we've experienced, when we go and take, or maybe it's just our audience, when we go and take a car on the track, right?
Nobody cares.
People just don't care.
Yeah.
But when we take a car on the road, people care.
But it's not our audience.
I don't know.
When Chris Harris takes a car on a track, people care.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you know, and we just don't have those driving chops, or in some cases, the videography chops to really showcase what a car can do on the track. So,
well, I mean, yeah. So Chris Harris, and I disagree about that too. Chris Harris and Top Gear have made going around the track sideways, you know, visual sports car, performance car porn, which is beautiful, but that's not how a race car driver would take a car around a track. So what you're doing is you're showing this car in this beautiful skid.
Yeah, but Chris
tire
is also,
spinning,
he's
slow
a,
motion.
He's also a very talented.
Oh, yes, of course. I'm not saying he's not. No, I'm just saying, but that's not how, like when we give our car to our race car drivers, none of them.
Because it's boring when you see him go fast.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
But that's
get him sideways.
Right, but that's not the test of a car.
Yeah, but they also go fast too. Getting a car sideways will also tell you a lot about vehicle performance.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it'll tell you what it does on the limit. That's a really big deal. I learned this, I was just interviewing a race car driver about going sideways. And it was a really interesting conversation. If you want to check that out, it'll be coming soon over at TFL Now. So look, I think that the Z06 and Z01 get a ton of credit that they definitely deserve. The one that doesn't get any credit, though, is the E-Ray. People really don't seem to understand the E-Ray.
You went and...
It's just very complicated. I think that it's a very hard concept to explain to people.
Four-wheel drive Corvette doesn't sound that hard to me.
No, but it's not just an all-wheel drive Corvette. Because the front axle is powered by an electric motor. And essentially...
BMW i8.
Yeah, once again, people don't understand.
Acura NSX.
Oh, can I finish?
No, I'm just saying. I'm poking holes in your argument. Keep going.
Yeah, but let me make the argument and then poke holes. You can't shoot down my ship if my ship's not in the water yet. So I gotta float my boat first. The problem is that it's very left-brained. So, for example, on the track, you can't just put it in the fast mode and go. There's like two or three different battery save modes. And that's a really complicated subject to explain to people. Then there's a creep mode in full electric, you know. And then how does that interact with the V8?
I don't think that Chevy built the E-Ray as the ultimate track car. I think they built it as the first all-wheel drive Corvette so that if you're going skiing or you're going... you know, an over I-70 and the snow starts falling, you have the confidence of having an all-wheel drive car. I don't think that car was engineered to be, we can argue that about the Revuelto, which I also drove, right, the Lamborghini Revuelto. I think that one was engineered to use all-wheel drive and make it quicker around the track. But I think the E-Ray was built as the first all-wheel drive Corvette. I think that's a misconception that people don't get.
When I went on the program, I don't recall them ever pushing the snow capability of the car. Because the problem is, as we talked about in the last podcast...
Were you on a track?
We did road and track.
Okay.
Yeah. When we did the last podcast, I was proven wrong. Sam, or buddy Sam, who's a very talented car journalist, agreed with you about ground clearance. That E-Ray has exactly 2.1 millimeters of ground clearance. So if they wanted to make it a snow-going machine, they would have done the car.
Well, I'm just saying, you've got four Corvettes, right?
Yeah.
And three of them are definitely... very much track oriented.
I think Chevrolet would tell you that the E-Ray is the quickest Grand Tourer. So it's a 0-60 in 2.6 seconds.
And when you're Grand Touring, it snows.
Yeah, sure. But you do 0-60 in 2.6 seconds.
Yes.
Which is, I think, quicker
until it runs out of battery.
It's quicker than the Z06.
Right.
But it also offers, like you said, some additional traction in wet, primarily. And then
I just think they made it. Maybe that's a better way of defining it. The best. All weather.
So I pitched to them, like, I'd love to get one and drive it in the snow with snow tires.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, no, that's okay. They weren't really into that idea. So you could, I think, and it would be much better, but it's more for like wet weather performance. It's just complicated that people don't understand hybrids. And we understand hybrids, the audience does. But I keep going back to this. Toyota did a survey a couple of years ago with 100,000 of their customers. What powers the Prius? What's a hybrid? And 50% of the typical customer said something like, a Prius is full electric. The hybrid concept is just a weird thing for people
to grasp.
And yet,
that's what people want now.
Yeah, now finally it's starting to catch on.
Everybody wants hybrids.
But hybrids are nerdy, right? Mm. Hybrids are me. I'm not cool. They want the massive V8. They don't want to think about electrification.
The Revuelto is the exact same thing as the E-Ray, and there's a 2-year wait for it.
That's true. But the La Revuelto is also...
Same three motors, one on each axle in the front, a big 12-cylinder in the back, right?
The other issue with E-Ray, and Camise has talked about this a little bit, is manufacturers can sell cars under $100,000. And manufacturers can sell cars over $500,000. It's like that 100 to 200 range. That's a really hard category.
There's a long waiting list. I just saw a Z06, $145,000.
Sure. And I think Z06 is an exception. But if you look at like Revuelto is $700,000.
Yeah, or eight.
Right? Or eight, yeah. Or six, 50 starting or whatever it is, right?
The ones I test are over eight.
And the issue is if I'm buying a Corvette, I'm going to either get a standard one because that's what I can afford. Or if I can afford a nice one, I'm going to get a Z06 or Z01. Why would I get an E-Ray?
Because you want the ultimate all-weather Corvette.
But if I can afford an E-Ray, I already have an Escalade. So why would I drive an E-Ray?
It's different, Tommy.
I don't think so.
Yeah, it's different. I would never cross-shop an Escalade with,
no,
with a Corvette.
No, I'm saying that I already have a snow car. Nobody's using this as their only
transportation. Yeah, but let's say I want to go on a cross-country tour and it's winter and it could turn bad. Right, I'm not going to take the Escalade. That's just a family getter, drive around to work car. I'm going to take the Corvette because that's the fun one to drive.
I'm not sure you're going to take that in the winter. I just don't see that happening. I mean, that's what they should have done with the E-Ray. This would have been so cool. Is we've seen the 911 Dakar, right? Lifted off-road tires rally. We've seen the Sturato,
yes,
right? The Lamborghini.
Well, they could still do that.
They should have done that with the E-Ray.
They could do that.
Because that would have been a cool way to exploit the fact it has all-wheel drive. Be like, we did this because it needs some all-wheel drive traction. But as it sits, it's just a little bit confusing.
So it's easy for Porsche to do it, right? Because they had that Dakar, and that car, the lifted 911 has been around, and it's got historical precedence.
What about Lamborghini?
Lamborghini's a little tougher, yeah. But Lamborghini did build the LM, the Rambo Lambo, right?
Well, Chevrolet built the Blazer.
But Chevrolet built a lot of cars, whereas Lamborghini builds like 14, right?
Listen,
in their entire history.
Chevrolet loves a three-digit alphanumeric code.
How many? I bet you we could name 14 cars. I bet you it's less than 14 that Lamborghini has built in their history.
You know what would have been a good name?
What?
Corvette E-Ray ZR2. They already have the branding.
Okay.
That would be awesome.
Hey, Chevy, if you're listening to this, lend us an E-Ray. We'll throw some 18.
Oh,
on
yeah,
it.
There you go.
And we'll build our own. We'll build our own version.
You're going to have to lift it a little, I think.
Well,
do
what Porsche did. Just put that little axle lift, not just in the front, but on the back.
Yeah, you
got
to put it in the rear. Yeah, that was really smart. Yeah. So I like the E-Ray. I just didn't love the E-Ray.
Look, wouldn't it look cool if you threw some, like a big light bar on the.
It was my idea. Of course it's going to look cool.
Yeah.
No, I think it would be really neat. So that's what I really think they should have done. Oh, there's Nathan.
There's Nathan. By the way, Nathan is not gone. Nathan is around. He's going to be doing more videos for us. So a lot of people have been asking about where's Nathan. And it's just been a very hectic few months. Nathan's getting settled in California. So there'll be more Nathan videos coming soon. And so stay tuned for those, okay? He's not gone.
So for me, I think I'd like the E-Ray, and it's going to be a hidden collectible, I think. And my theory is, and this is not a hot take, everybody thinks this, but what they're going to do for the Zora, which is supposedly the car above the ZR1, it's going to be the ZR1 drivetrain with the E-Ray hybrid system. Put them together and you've got the ultimate performance Corvette.
Well, the Zora is going to be all-wheel drive, right? That's what they're...
But that's how they would do it, is they would take the E-Ray front axle, the ZR2 rear axle, put them together and you got
a
Zora.
Are those exhaust square as well? That's the one thing I don't like. I like the old round exhaust... Especially the Grand Sport exhaust in the middle, right? The four-round exhaust. I don't like the square exhaust or something that just...
I think...
It would have been cooler. Just round exhaust for some reason are cooler than square exhaust.
The car is very striking in its design, but I don't think it's beautiful. I think it's a little busy. There's just a lot of triangles and angles and shapes going on.
And the other thing I don't like about our car is that I'm too fat or too tall or both. And it's like a suit that's one size too small.
Sure.
I just feel very confined in it. And I just feel like they could have made the interior a little busy. We also have the i8. That's very comfortable, even though it's got those, you know, funky doors. It's still a lot easier to live in as opposed to the Corvette, where I'm a little squeezed for
the other
room.
Thing about our car.
Yeah.
So we have the Z51 performance package.
Yes.
Now, Chevrolet says that car will go from 0 to 60 in 2.9 seconds.
And we just did it in 4.4.
Yeah.
At a mile above sea level.
So the thing is, and Car and Driver got like 2.8, but that was under the most ideal conditions with the smallest skilled guy with no gas on a prep surface. In the real world, I haven't seen a lot of Corvettes doing very far under like 3.5. And at elevation, about 4 seconds is normal, especially on our ungrippy surface, our pretty rough surface. So it's a very quick car. But interestingly, in the quarter mile, today we ran the i8 in 12.6 seconds, and the Corvette ran a 12.57.
Video coming soon.
Yeah. So both very good times. That's real world mile above sea level times. And the i8's a hybrid, which helps at elevation and turbocharged. So the Corvette is a very, very fast car. But it's tough to get that 2.9 even at sea level because you have to be under the exact right conditions.
So have we done with the Corvette?
Yes, I think so. I am excited about it. Yeah. I think it's a really cool car. And I'm hoping that I'll become more friends with it over the next few months. And I'm hoping we don't take a huge loss on it when we go to sell it. But I'm excited to see what the future holds.
So we just did a video over at TFL EV where we talked about Tesla. And I asked a question, is it toxic? Is the brand toxic? Because obviously you've got a lot of people who are protesting the brand now because of what Elon Musk is doing in the government. And one of the things that we want to talk about is the fact that the current administration is yanking out something like, is it 8,000 or 80,000?
I think it's 8,000
chargers from federal buildings.
But I believe I read something, and this was an analyst company that said this, that it's going to cost them like $1 billion.
It costs more to yank them out than to leave them.
Which is insane. Because they spent hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions installing these things, okay?
Yeah.
And you could.
It feels spiteful.
It does feel spiteful, especially because this is a revenue-generating opportunity.
Yeah, just make them for profit.
Yeah. And electricity, generally in the U.S., you can make a little bit of money on. The chargers are already installed. You know, if they're up and running, it's not going to take a ton to keep them up and running, and it's an opportunity to make money. So why spend $1 billion removing them if they're already there? It is spiteful. That's the exact right word.
Yeah, it just seems also counterproductive because one of the things this administration
wasting time with this
has said that one of the things they need to do is cut the budget. So why are you spending more money removing stuff that could be used to generate more additional revenue?
Dumb.
It just seems
and they don't take up that much. They don't take up that much space.
Yeah.
The utilities have already been upgraded in some cases if it's a DC charger to meet demand. Level 2 chargers don't take up any space. Level 2 chargers are also now very reliable. What the hell? What is the point of this? It's just dumb. It's just so dumb.
And it also seems like you're not necessarily giving the employees, maybe that's the point of it. You want to get rid of those employees, so you're making their lives harder.
And the thing is, even if electrification is not the end-all be-all, which I don't think it is. I don't think electric cars are going to work for everybody. But plug-in hybrids are the hot thing right now. They work for so many people. And guess what you have to do with a plug-in hybrid? You should be charging it up. And where could you charge it up?
At work.
At work. So why remove that? What is the upside here? None. There's no upside other than to put
the libs build your ego. Put the libs in their place.
It's just stupid. It's just dumb.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing that I find interesting, and this is coming from a lot of the car community, and I try to keep away from politics. And if you watch that video about is Tesla toxic, I think we walked that line very well, but we didn't get involved in politics because, you know, we look at this space here as a politics-free space. So we really try not to pick sides. We just try to be honest and straightforward about, you know, what's happening and look, kind of give our take on it.
That would have been really easy 15 years ago. And it was easy 15 years ago. But now, especially that Tesla is so politicized and the head guy in charge is involved in the government, you cannot avoid it. It's impossible. You just can't do it. You know, we can't be doing our jobs and not talk about it because it's the hot issue of the moment, and to ignore it is irresponsible, I think.
Yeah, yeah, and if you know, we're kind of just following the news cycle, not creating the news cycle. Even though a lot of people blame us for creating the news cycle, but you know, if we want to do a successful video, then it has to be something that resonates with all of you guys. So that's why we're talking about this stuff, not because we necessarily feel like we have to be talking about it. And that brings me to that point I was going to make. Right, we spent a lot of time and energy over the last 4 years covering electric cars. And the reason for that was not because we love electric cars or because we want to promote electric cars. It's because the manufacturers built a lot of electric cars.
Yeah. And it's our job to review what the manufacturer builds.
It's like,
and to be honest, we would go out of business if we didn't.
Yeah, it'd be like,
you know, we can't just ignore a whole segment of new cars.
Yeah, it'd be like if Chevy and Ford and everybody else started selling horses, and everybody's like, "Why are you covering horses?" And we'd be like, "Well, because that's what these people are selling. That's what they're selling."
I agree.
I know. And so I always find it funny when people like leave the comment like, "Stop promoting electric cars," and we're like, "Hey, this is where it's going." Now, the other thing I'm seeing, and this is especially true in the automotive space from a lot of journalists. And the other interesting thing is, you know, there's just a lot of people out there saying the journalists are promoting electric cars. I find that almost funny because, you know, we were one of the first, got to give credit to Kyle. He came along much earlier than we did, but we were one of the first to actually buy a Tesla. And back when we bought that Model 3, I don't think most automotive journalists had even driven a Tesla.
Yeah, I agree.
Right? Yeah. So this idea that somehow that there was a cabal of automotive journalists saying, "Hey, we got to sell electric cars." In fact, I would say, and this is what people are also going to argue about, that most automotive journalists love the passion that internal combustion brings, right? They love the sound, they love the fury. And so electric cars were ignored for a long time or were dealt with as kind of an oddity and never really taken seriously, just like much of the automotive industry didn't take them seriously until all of a sudden everything like went electric.
The thing I don't understand about that argument is like the passion, the fury, right? The soul that internal combustion brings. If you were talking about a 1971 C3 Corvette with a 454 and a 4-speed, yeah, that's a lot of soul. That's a lot of passion. That's big block American muscle. If you're talking about Cole's car, no offense, Cole, but Cole drives a 15-year-old RAV4, not a lot of soul or passion there. Hey.
He's got the V6. That's right, V6, which is freaking quick, dude.
But my point is, I'm fine if EVs replace a RAV4 because RAV4s are boring. Obviously not Cole's. Cole's is awesome. But the typical RAV4
Mary drives the same car with a V6.
Yeah, her also awesome, obviously. But the typal modern RAV4
Put your car up there, Cole, or did you do that in Kairos already? He did it in Kairos. Hey, by the way, if you want to hear a fun podcast, Tommy and the girls and sometimes Case and the girls do a podcast called Kairos-ish. That we publish every 2 weeks. I just listened to it, and I was amazed that Jen actually drove Michael Jordan's car.
Yeah, she drove Michael Jordan's McLaren. So
look up Kairos, and if you want to know how Jen got to drive Michael Jordan's Mercedes McLaren.
Yeah, very cool. So
Tommy's like, yeah, very cool.
But I'm trying to make a point here, is that like new cars, sure, some of them have a lot of soul, keep those gas, but the typical Rogue, who cares if it's an appliance? It's already an appliance. Just make it a better appliance.
And this, you're making my point. So here's my hard-held belief, and I don't think I've heard a lot of people express this yet. The most popular car in the country right now is the Toyota RAV4.
Yeah.
Followed by the Honda CR-V.
Sure.
Followed by, you know,
Camry.
The 14. All those midsize or small crossovers. Those
Camry still sells like 300,000.
200,000, but those crossovers do much better. So to your point, those cars are a lot of things, but you know, they don't make the pump blood faster, right? The heart beat harder. They're just kind of transportation. And this is the thing that electric cars are really good at. If you look at a car like it's a toaster, in other words, it's an appliance. You need something to get you from point A to point B, and you want something that integrates with your digital lifestyle, then electric cars are really good at that. And that's the whole irony of this, you know, newfound electric car hate, and that is that for most people, because they're so boring, I don't know, what do you want to, just appliance, like utilitarian, technologically easy to operate because the operating system is probably the same that's on, the one that's on your phone, right? By the way, that's happening as well. Then I think over the long term, electric cars will rule the roost, not because it's people who are passionate about cars, not because it's people who want a better environment, not because people hate electric cars, but because they're just so much easier to live with when your house is your gas station and you drive to work and back and then you plug it in again and you do the same thing, just like your phone.
If you have a house.
Yes.
That's a big caveat.
But we just bought, we bought that Buro in Moab and this was low. We bought a very inexpensive 2-bedroom. And this may be a unique thing that's only applied to us. And most of it was for people who live in Moab, right?
Yeah.
And yet, one of the options we could have opted for was to have a charger installed.
Yeah, but that is a different situation because it was a new build, sure. And they were offering chargers installed.
But there's a lot of new builds.
But there's a lot of renters. I mean, I would imagine the vast majority of residential areas in urban spots are renters. And renters are not going to spend the money to upgrade their parking spot if they have one to have an EV charger. Like Cole, would you pay $1,000 to get an EV charger? That's a hard no.
He's shaking his head. Well, yeah. I don't know if it's a hard no. Is it a hard no or just a medium no? Hard, it's a hard note.
It's a hard note. But that's the point. Yeah. Like, is if you live in an apartment building and you don't own it, and even if you do, it's going to be hard to get EV charging installed, right?
All right, Cole, how about if I said to you, would you spend $1,000 to save $2,000? He said he wouldn't have an EV ever.
That's fair.
That a lot of people, right now, he says. And that's actually, that's a really great, I listened to this podcast where it's basically a part. It's a podcast. It's a radio show where the host helps people buy cars, mm-hmm. and that is his point. And I always find that so silly, where he says it's not a good time to buy an EV right now. I think it's a really good time to buy an EV because they're dirt cheap, dude. If you're going to buy an EV or lease one, this is the time to do it.
There's a good chance the credits will be going away too, so this is the time to do it.
Well, they depreciate like crazy. And by the way, our car dealer was telling us, you know, you just lease this Fiat 500e.
Yeah.
The reason they're so cheap is because Colorado has that $5,000 credit, mm-hmm. and so the manufacturers are dumping electric cars in Colorado.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And the dealer is not happy about it.
Well, but that's because he's a Stellantis Fiat dealer. If you're a Nissan dealer, I think you're pretty stoked about it.
He had the new Daytona Charger SRT electric e-muscle car there. It was his first one was there when I picked up the Corvette. And there was also somebody buying the new Wagoneer S when I was there.
I don't think he had a Daytona, though. That's not out yet.
No, he had it wasn't a Daytona. It was it was just a regular one.
The whatever, Charger EV.
Yeah. The first one.
I just ran into someone at the gym the other day who was a fan of the channel. Him and his wife were working out, and they were internal combustion enthusiasts. They had gasoline trucks.
Right.
And the Aria leases were so cheap that they picked up an Aria for nothing. And they had really no interest in EVs. They didn't seem to care. And then once she lived with this Aria for 2 weeks, she has decided she never wants to go back to gas. And he's selling his truck to go to like a Lightning or a Silverado EV because it's just so much more convenient. Now, it depends on your lifestyle, right? If you're doing 200 miles a day or 100 miles a day like Cole's doing, maybe it doesn't make sense. But if you're doing 50 miles a day or 60 miles a day or 70, and you have a place to charge at home, then it makes total sense.
How about like when we just bought that 2014 Tesla Model S with lifetime free supercharging?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be a great choice if you can find one of those?
No.
And then just go to the supercharger, plug it in, go to Panera, have dinner, and bring it back, and it's completely free?
I disagree with that.
What do you think, Cole? Free supercharging. Would that change your mind?
No.
Not even free supercharging.
Because it's so slow. Skiing. So we go skiing. No place to charge it at skiing. You're all tired.
What do you mean there's no place to charge it? Yeah. All right. Well, before you say no, I'm pushing it. So we did a drag race today. So we charge up that 2014 Tesla, which only has like, you know, supposedly 230 miles of range. So we drove it from fully charged from the ranch up to Fort Collins and back to Boulder, which is how many miles? About 100 miles.
Yeah.
And it still had 68% of the battery. So that will get you to the ski area and back.
The problem is that then once you get back, you have to charge it.
Free supercharging. Panera.
You're not listening. You're not listening, though. Listen to what I'm saying. How long does it take to charge that car from empty to 80%?
Well, they slowed it down, the weasels.
Yes!
The Tesla weasels slowed it down.
It's horrible.
It used to be, when it was new, it charged like 120 kilowatts. And now it charges 50. Like 60.
It's like a leaf. It charges like a leaf.
No, I saw it at 68.
Yeah, and then do you see what happens if you plug it in for more than 5 minutes?
I don't know. I went to Panera.
Yeah, it takes. that car charges so ungodly slowly. 0 to 80% in that car.
But wait. No, it doesn't charge ungodly slowly. The software update that Tesla gave
doesn't matter.
Slowed it down because they didn't want people charging it for free.
So can you undo that update?
I don't know. Maybe.
You cannot. You can't.
I bet you can.
No, you cannot.
I bet you there's a way to jailbreak
it. In 2019... Tesla pushed an update to the early cars that nerfed the charging, and there's no way around it because it's baked into the ECU. So what you're left
with... Hey, the i8 was baked into the ECU, and you can... And i3, same thing, where you had, you know, the government said that you had to turn on the Rex, right? The range extender when the battery is depleted, and you can go and change it.
Hold on there, because what you're doing with that is you're just wiping the software and installing the European software. That's essentially what you're doing. The features in the car, you're just turning it on, right? There's no way you can go in a Tesla.
I bet you there's somebody.
I've looked into it because I was curious.
Yeah.
I haven't found anyone that's done it.
Oh, there's people out there.
Dad.
Computer and
so a 2019, Tesla nerfed the charging from 120 to 60 or 50.
And I saw 68.
Yeah, but that's still so slow. At 60.
Well, just be clear.
Okay, so let's say it's at 68 all the way from empty to full.
Yeah.
That is still sitting at Panera
for an hour.
For over an hour.
Yes.
An hour.
Yes.
A Panera Bread.
Yes. And
you have one baguette in 3 minutes. What are you going to do for the next 57?
You know how many people go to Panera and, you know, cut the coupon just so they can save a dollar on their bagel? And here I am getting like, what is it, probably $25 worth of free electricity? You know, because I'm sitting at Panera for an hour. Sorry, I'm a cheapskate. There's just something really great about getting something for nothing. Even though it's slow, my time probably is more valuable.
I would hope it's more valuable than $25 an hour.
Every time I do that, it puts a huge smile on my face because I feel like I'm getting away with something.
So I was doing this video with that car with Jen and Mary. And I'm like, let's go charge it up. And I went on the app. The ones at Panera were all full.
Okay.
I'm like, well, I don't want to do that.
But there's another set now.
So I went to the other set.
Yeah, the one by the car wash.
You know where the other set is?
By the car wash.
Yeah. You know what there was to do there? Absolutely nothing.
You know what's across the street? You know what's next door to it?
A car wash. No. A used car dealer.
No, you know, like the 2 minute walk next to it.
What?
There is the Indian place.
I'm not. And you're walking across four lanes of traffic to get to the Indian.
It's on the same side.
No, you have to walk through the car wash.
No, you walk around the car wash, and right next door there is an Indian place, and there is Alibaba, which is a Lebanese place.
So it's
and then there's a coffee shop next to that.
It's 3 p.m. We just ate.
Go to the coffee shop.
I'm not. This is such a waste of time, Dad. This is such a stupid thing. The car is amazing if you have home charging. It's one of the best EVs I've ever driven.
I love getting away with it. It makes me so happy.
Well, not all of us have hours to spend just sitting at Panera waiting for the damn thing to charge.
Hold on. Before you guys.
Let's
be very clear. Panera is in the Boulder Mall, and there is a lot more in the mall than
you
Panera.
You have Claire's. You can go get a piercing. That's awesome. You can go walk around the Apple Store and look at iPhones you already have. You can go to Shake Shack. That's kind of interesting, I guess. You can go buy shoes. So
there's Bird Call.
Ooh, I love Bird Call. No, Dad, that's just a waste of time. I don't want to have to structure my life around sitting to wait for an old
ass. Mr. Moneybags here. He's happily giving. Here, take $25.
Dad, my time is worth more than $25 an hour, as is your time. And if I live in Berthoud, where am I going to charge? If I didn't have charging in Berthoud.
I don't know. I got to say, Tommy, like out of all the free stuff I've won in my life, which isn't a lot, right? For the most part, I do very poorly. Anytime I gamble, anytime I do like any kind of a thing where I'm like, I always lose. And so buying a car that has free supercharging just seems like a huge win for me. But that's me. I freely admit that.
That you have charging at your house. You can plug it in and charge it for $7.
I have two chargers at the house.
Yes.
You've got three at the ranch.
So you could go charge it at home for $7. So what are you doing waiting for an hour at Panera to save $25?
Enjoying a delicious bagel.
And then how much is that bagel free? Is Tesla paying for the bagel?
They're not paying
for it. So now you've spent money to buy a bagel to save a little money and waste an hour.
And iced tea.
And, by the way, degrading the battery.
Delicious iced tea.
And degrading the battery.
I don't care. It's a $13,000 car with 100,000 miles.
I just really don't care. Look, the free supercharging, it's a fun novelty. Yeah. And I do think it's cool it has it. And maybe one day, if electricity becomes $9 a kilowatt hour, it's going to make a lot of sense.
Hey, Cole, how long have we been going, okay, we're getting to the end of this. Sorry, guys, for bickering for an hour. I feel horrible. I don't know why I even listen to this podcast.
Your arguments are just unbelievable today. They're just unbelievable.
You know, a part of this may be kind of a generational thing.
You have time to waste. You're older than me. You're going to die before I am. You got stuff to do. Don't just sit there.
You better knock on wood, Tommy. There's a bus that comes across. You could be easily hit by that bus.
God. I can't sit there for an hour doing nothing. Go crazy over there.
You're also assuming that I'm like, diligently waiting to charge 100%. First of all, you can go there and charge it for 25 minutes and still get enough
40%
to drive around because you're not going there at empty.
Yeah, but if you get there and charge for 25 minutes.
Let's say I go there, it's got like 30% or something. I spend a half hour, back up to 70%. It's all good.
That's just awful.
All right.
And the problem is that the full charge in that car only does like 220 miles.
Only 220.
It's not that much.
Oh, God.
220 for an hour of charging?
When's the last time you drove 220? And I'm not including the road trip we took to California. Seriously, when is the last time you drove 220 miles?
Well, I drive 50 miles a day.
Okay, but
so that's four days.
That's not 200. No, in one go, in one day, when's the last time you drove? This is another thing that people like freak out about. Oh my God, I need 4,000 miles of range. And yet, typical person drives. And there was kind of this bullshit thing that Leaf did, and they said, typical person drive 30 miles a day, so when the Leaf came out, 60 miles is plenty. I know it's not plenty, obviously, but in reality, most people don't drive more than, even, let's be generous, 100 miles a day, because you're spending like, you know, 2-3 hours, unless you're in LA traffic.
So maybe. You're Cole, right? You bought that car.
Yeah.
You don't have home charging, right?
Right.
220 miles is plenty, right? No one's driving 220 miles.
Yeah, especially because he's got a charger here at the office.
Cole, how far is your commute?
Probably
90 miles. That's 2 days of commuting.
All right, let's do this.
2 days.
Hold on. Let's do this. All right. Let's do this. I will give Cole the Tesla to drive for a week. You want to drive for a week? Try it. See if you can live with it. Would you be willing to do that? Oh, it'll get towed. No, you can't get a towed. Or broken into.
So this other problem. Look.
It's an 11-year-old Tesla.
This is actually an interesting point that Coles brings up. So we've been seeing a lot of vandalism of Tesla products lately.
Yeah, don't vandalize Tesla products. I know.
Lot of vandalism.
Hate the man, but don't hate the game. Just people, because they've bought Teslas or because, you know, Musk has gone off the deep end. Don't take it out on the owners. That's just silly.
I agree.
If you want to go protest, there's a protest happening.
There's a peaceful protest happening.
Fine. Yeah, for sure. But don't vandalize stuff. That's just silly.
You're right. You should never vandalize a car. That's terrible.
You're not making any point.
But the problem is, Ted, is that he has become so embroiled in the government, you can't separate the two anymore.
That's why I did the video. I think personally that Tesla has become toxic.
I mean, and we're talking basically... He has wormed his way into the government and convinced them now to spend $400 million on his own cars. $400 million. There was a Wall Street Journal I didn't finish reading about that, but that's crazy.
I think you're talking about the armored cyber trucks. Yeah,
yes.
I don't know if that fell through, if it's going, I don't know.
I think it's
still
going through, but imagine that $400 million.
What I don't get is obviously, you know, what he's doing is hurting the brand. And why there's a thing called corporate governance where there's supposed to be a board and they're supposed to be like, hey, we look out for the best interest of the stockholders. And the stock, if you watch your video, has fallen, get this, 26% in the last month.
It's 20% in a week?
Yeah, that is just a
horrible,
huge amount of loss. And yet the board just sitting there doing UBU. I don't understand that. So maybe they're just in his pocket, or maybe, you know, the stock has made so much money for so many people and has been so strong for so long that people just think it'll bounce back. But if you watch that video, you'll note that, like, in Germany, Tesla sales are off 60%. Mm-hmm. In China, they're struggling because BYD is coming on strong. Mm-hmm. It was funny. So one of the comments in that video I did was saying that basically BYD is giving away full self-driving for free, or as Tesla charges for it. And then somebody made the comment that we were misleading people because they're giving away, this is what the commenter said, I don't know the truth of this, so we'll have to Google it or have to do some truth, but they're giving away basically autopilot and not full self-driving. Mm. And so we were misleading people by claiming that they were giving away full self-driving. And I started thinking about it. I'm like, what's more misleading, giving away some kind of a software package or calling full self-driving, which is basically level 2 out of 5 levels of autonomy? You know, full self-driving. If anybody's misleading people, it's the company calling their crap full self-driving, which it isn't.
I can't believe, though.
And I'm not saying it's crap. I've driven it. It works. But it's not full self-driving.
I can't believe. I mean, the crazy thing is now, though, it is full self-driving in the sense that you don't touch the pedals or the steering wheel.
Well, technically, level 5 full self-driving, which is full self-driving, means the vehicle can drive itself without any attention from anybody. So there's no like conductor in a train. There's no driver in the in the driver's seat in any weather conditions under any circumstances. So in snow, in dark, in rain, in freezing, whatever the circumstances are, the vehicle will get to where it's going, even if all the sensors are blocked.
Yes.
That's full self-driving.
And I know. And the thing is, the Tesla system, you still have to be vigilant. It makes a ton of mistakes. And you are taking responsibility for anything that car or truck is doing, right?
Right.
But what I mean by it is full self-driving is that it is able to navigate to a destination without any input from the driver. Now, it may not do that safely. It may need intervention, which is input from the driver, but it can do that, which is crazy that is allowed. That's allowed because it's so good until it's not. And when it's not, it makes fatal mistakes.
Yeah, when we had our Cybertruck, I was really impressed until I almost hit a car.
Exactly. That's what I mean.
Anyway.
Well, and I do want to point out one more thing about this, which is interesting.
Cole's sick. We got to finish up.
I know. There's only one system, as far as I know of, that has progressed beyond level 2 to level 3.
Which is Mercedes.
And, yeah, Mercedes. And the difference between level 2 and level 3 is that under level 3, the vehicle is in charge and the driver can more or less check out. So Mercedes has a system called Drive Pilot. And on pre-mapped highways in California, at speeds under 45 miles an hour, it will do the driving. And you're probably thinking, well, the Super Cruise will do that in Blue Cruise. The difference is the Mercedes system is designed in such a way where the car then takes responsibility for anything it does.
So you're saying the Mercedes system doesn't have eye tracking software or a torque sensor on the steering wheel, that if the driver under 45 miles an hour is asleep, it can still drive?
That is the one thing you can't do. You cannot sleep.
How about play video games?
Yeah, you can read a book. You can play video games on the screen. You can be disengaged completely from the driving experience, and Drive Pilot will take over. Now, that's an amazing piece of technology, and how are they able to do that?
And that's only level 3.
That's level 3. But the what Tesla does is they essentially do that, realistically, with cameras.
Right.
That's what they have, yeah, right?
No sonar.
No cameras. And technically, they call it level 2, so the truck's still responsible. But if you're next to that Mercedes at 45 miles an hour, they're both doing the same thing. They're both driving themselves, right? Mercedes has two steering racks. They have a primary steering rack.
So it's like an airplane.
And there's a backup steering rack.
There's redundancy built into the system.
They have long range and short range LiDAR technology.
Yeah.
They have three GPS antennas. That's how well-baked the Mercedes system is.
And the reason for that, of course, is because if it goes wrong, people die.
That's right. Tesla is letting you, under that certain circumstance, doing the same thing. Just cameras. No LiDAR sensors. No three GPS sensors. One steering rack that's not even attached in the Cybertruck, right? It's all electronic. That's the commitment that Mercedes has to level 3. And that's the responsibility I expect out of these automakers that Tesla isn't doing.
Well, that's not going to happen with Mr. Musk and the government.
But they're giving way too much freedom to these cars to basically beta test on public roads.
And let's face it, he's going to get more.
And he's going to get a lot more.
And if people die, there's going to be less consequences.
Yep, and then people are going to sue, and those lawsuits are going to go away.
And maybe that's why people think the stock is going to go up. I don't know. Anyway, let's wrap this up because we have spent over an hour. Thank you guys for joining us. Hey, one last thing I want to say. When we were coming back from the track, there was a guy driving, it was some kind of a diesel, who was pulling like a cement mixer.
Yeah.
Right? Very heavy. Also deleted. If you're going to be towing, don't drive like Max Verstappen. He was like zipping in and out of traffic. Please don't do that. Dude, you've got like 25,000 pounds. Why are you, jackrabbing starting, pulling in and out of traffic? I was like amazed by this. I was like, dude, do it. If you're going to do it, you shouldn't do it anyway, but why are you doing that towing? That was just crazy.
Yeah, I agree.
You missed it. You were ahead of him.
Yeah, I saw him behind you. Yeah. By the way, I got my Mercedes diesel back for all the people hate EVs.
Nice.
Mercedes diesel is back in action.
Okay.
Case called it unbelievably slow.
It is painfully slow. It is dangerously slow.
Dangerously slow.
I floored it. You could outrun it. That's how slow it is. Up to 10 miles an hour, I could outrun that.
It's not.
If I were on a bike, I'd be a mile down before you caught up to me.
Listen, Dad, the 60-foot time on the Mercedes diesel is not great. But once you're moving, it's pretty good, right? It'll do 85, sort of.
It won't do 85.
It will do 85.
It'll do 65 comfortably.
It'll do, yeah.
Okay.
65 is where it's happy. But it will do 85. It's not that slow. It's 123
horsepower. Diesels love to rev, Tommy. That's their favorite thing.
It's 123 horsepower and 180 pound-feet of torque.
It's kind of those old diesels are horrible.
What do you mean they're horrible? Oh, that's horrible. Fighting words.
Undrivable.
No, this car will last well beyond I'm dead.
For all of you who have lusted after an old Mercedes diesel,
you're going to love it.
You're going to be so disappointed at how, not just how slowly it accelerates, at how slowly it shifts, at how poorly it shifts, right? Every shift is like, and I'm like, lurch forward, lurch backward,
look,
right?
It's the thing about these cars, Dad, is they were designed first and foremost to be dependable.
Yes, they were designed to be taxi cabs in Frankfurt, and they do very well at that.
And that is what makes that car special. You're right. It is a very slow experience that is incredibly clattery. But what I love about that car is that it's like a Swiss watch. You can depend on it to always work.
Yes, you can.
And that's very cool. So my Mercedes is back in action. It needed ball joints. It had a transmission leak. I know I said it's dependable. It's also old. So it had a really bad transmission leak, and I put a new vacuum modulator
in it. How much was all this?
Shifting's better, by the way, now.
How much was all this?
$3,600.
Wow.
Yeah.
About the cost of our P38.
Give or take. I got a little ripped off, I think. But it's got new ball joints. It's got an alignment, and it's perfect now.
All right. Well, guys, thanks for joining us. Let us know in the comments below if you believe that in the 80s, Land Rover had a good or bad or other reputation for reliability. We'd love to read your comments. We read all of them as much as we can. And as always, we'll see you next time.
Yep. Thanks for watching, guys. Bye. Bye.
Ciao.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.